Well, hey, welcome back. Thanks for joining me today again. It is episode number 64 of the High School Basketball Referee with Mark Freilich podcast. Today's guest is Ryan Bowers of Norwalk, Ohio. Ryan is a member of the Bay Area Basketball Officials Association and has been a high school basketball official for 22 years. He's also a 15-year football official and a member of the Bay Area Football Officials Association, and he's in his fourth season as a baseball umpire and a member of the Norwalk Area Baseball Softball Association. Within the basketball portion of the association, he has been vice president, he has been president and mechanics interpreter. Now he is in his first season as the association secretary. That's part of our discussion within the podcast. In basketball, Ryan has officiated more than 70 sectional games. Now, the sectional games, for those outside of Ohio, those are the first round tournament games in the postseason. And he's done 70 of those, more than 70, since 2012. More than 35 district games since 2014. 8 regional games since 2015. 2 boys Final Four semifinal games. In 2017 and 2019, 1 boys Final Four final in 2022, and 1 girls Final Four final in 2016. Tremendous success from Ryan Bowers, and he's got some great things to say throughout this podcast. And if you think basketball is impressive for him, football, he's worked 39 playoff games since 2012 with 6 as part of an officiating crew at and in football, if you think his basketball resume was good, in football, he has worked 39 playoff games since 2012. Goodness, with 6 semifinal tournaments. If you find value in the High School Basketball Referee podcast, become a popcorn sponsor. One way is through Venmo, and that is at HS Basketball Referee Podcast, and the other is a monthly support through Spotify. The links for both are in the show notes, and when you sponsor, you'll hear your name as a member of the Popcorn Sponsor Club. And the High School Basketball Referee Podcast thanks Kyle Moss. And Kyle, I hope I pronounced your last name right. He's the latest member of the Popcorn Sponsor Club of the podcast. So thank you again, Kyle. We appreciate that. To be able to keep the fuel running on this podcast, we appreciate the sponsorship. And he joins also Wayne Altstetter and Keith Walker as now members of that great Popcorn Sponsor Club. So thank you very much. And if you want to become a popcorn sponsor, again, please go to Venmo at HS Basketball Referee Podcast or find out the monthly support through podcast. Everything that you need to know is in the show notes of this podcast episode. Also, remember to find the High School Basketball Referee Podcast on X, formerly Twitter, and Facebook. And be sure to become a sponsor, or not a sponsor, but a subscriber, or follow this podcast on your preferred podcast platform. Hopefully it's Spotify. That's the preferred podcast of the High School Basketball Referee. And also, please provide any kind of rating on the podcast and leave comments if you can. Of course, thank you for taking the time to listen. I hope you enjoy the episode. Ryan does a great job here and provides some great insight. So here we go. Ryan Bowers with episode number 64 is coming up right now. It is another episode of the High School Basketball Referee Podcast. And today, what a great guest we have today. Ryan Bowers, as you heard on the introduction, is our guest. A lot of experience, some great state tournament experience. So Ryan, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on your show today.
And as we always do, we want to begin this podcast in the pregame where we get to know our our guest a little bit, and you'll get to know him even more in the fourth quarter when we ask some personal questions. But pregame, I like to kind of set this up like we do in a basketball game, where we come into the locker room and we just get to know each other a little bit better. And boy, Ryan, a lot of impressive items on your resume that, as you heard in the introduction, or everybody else heard in the introduction, is four Final Four appearances since 2001. Yeah, and that's just basketball. I mean, there's 10 Final Fours in football, and then you've got the College Football Stag Bowl in 2019. I mean, holy, you know what? I mean, what a great career at a young age.
I appreciate it, Mark. I mean, I'm very blessed, you know, to, you know, kind of be in front of the right people and be seen at the right amount of times. And I'm nowhere close to being done. You know, like I said, it's an honor, you know, to be able to be picked for, you know, some of those games, you know, in multiple sports. And like I said, it's definitely a blessing. I definitely don't take it for granted. And, you know, I want to just keep working as hard as I possibly can just to, you know, make the game a better place, you know.
And it's still fun, right?
Oh, it's absolutely. Like, yeah. I said, I go out there, you know, every night. And like I said, I'll talk about this later, but it's kind of my stress reliever. You know, we're kind of weird. We're kind of weird as officials. You know, I think we sometimes view this as a stress reliever where people think we're crazy, you know, in saying that. But I mean, I enjoy it. It's something that I can just go to, and it's kind of my relaxing time. And it sounds super weird, but it is.
No, I think a majority of us get that for sure. And I've always said, you know, I could have the worst day in the world, but when I step on the basketball floor, I'm calm, relaxed, because the focus is on something different. And it is. You're 100% right. It's a good stress reliever, especially when things are going well. 2022-2023 basketball season has come and gone, and we are here on the 23-24 season already. And kind of take a look back, if you would, at 22-23 and think about maybe how did you grow as a basketball official, and maybe include one major thing that you learned about yourself from last year.
Sure, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of different things, you know, that I learned during the season, but I guess one thing that I really strive for, and I think that, you know, I think you can keep working on this as long as you officiate. You know, we're in the people business, you know. So I guess one thing that I really, really was working on, especially the last couple of years, and I have in no way mastered it, but just my communication with coaches, you know, just being able to diffuse, you know, this situation, being able to communicate with them in a way that you're able to listen to what they have to say, give an ear, you know, maybe give a quick response, you know, but then move on. You know, I've tried a couple phrases that I used last year. Like I said, I'm in no way, you know, in no way saying that these could work for everybody, you know, but one thing that, you know, I would like to, you know, say or whatever that I learned is, you know, I understand, coach, and I'm listening to what you have to say. I just don't agree. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of times saying something like that will let them understand that you're listening. You're giving them an ear, but at the same time, you're in no way saying that, you know, that you disagree, you know, and you're moving on. That kind of seemed to work for me a little bit last year. You know, also another phrase, like, let's not question my integrity, coach. If you have a question, ask it, and then move on from there. You know, just to show that you are going to listen, you are human, you're trying to work together, but at the same time, you're not going to disrespect me. I'll listen to you if you say in a respectful manner, and then we'll kind of move on. Just kind of building that rapport, you know, with the coach. Like I said, I'm in no way, you know, perfect, and I think we're all kind of learning each and every year. But those were a couple things, you know, that I worked on and grew as an official, I think, last year, the year before.
Yeah, that's some good stuff. And it's always good every year. It seems like you're right. We learn something new every year about our game and how we can improve. And you've been doing that now since 2001. Tell us a little bit about your journey into basketball officiating.
Okay, well, I think my officiating career, I'm going to go way back to I was about 10 or 11. I started umpiring baseball for the T-ball, and I started umpiring there as a kid. And you know, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed making some money, especially as a kid. I think I did that, you know, up until about high school and like until I really started, you know, getting into sports heavy. Sports has always been a humongous part of my life. I learned a lot of life lessons through sports and really valued, you know, some of the friendships and everything I had to sports. So I guess it was just a natural progression for me to get into basketball. I started officiating basketball when I was 20, went away to school for a couple years, decided to come back, didn't really know what I was looking for and everything, and found out about a basketball officiating class. I guess when I first got into it, like you know, some a lot of other people, I got into it for the money. I mean, even though you're not going to make a lot of money on it, I got into the money and just started really enjoying it. You know, started enjoying some of the, you know, relationships I would build, the amount of games you could do. And I guess my journey into basketball, like I said, started when I was, like I said, about 20 years old. So.
Yeah, when you're 20, it you know, when we look at it now, it's probably the money's not that good. But when you're 20, that's good money for somebody who's 20 to pay for gas, to pay for beverages or whatever it might be. I mean, that still helps out. Plus, look at the experience you're getting at age 20 to really kind of become a little bit more mature with what you the responsibilities you have, like keeping track of a schedule and making sure you're there on time and holding yourself accountable on the basketball floor. So there's a lot to learn, and 20 is a perfect age to start learning that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I tell high school kids, I tell college kids, I said, this is the best part-time job that you possibly can have.
Yeah, it is. It really is. How about your first game? Do you remember that?
Ooh, yeah, I actually do. Yeah, I remember my first game. I was a junior high game, and it was at Clyde Junior High, which is, you know, close to where I live. And I remember going in there, you know, playing a lot of sports, thinking, okay, I have this, you know, I'm gonna do this game. Thankfully, I had an experienced partner. You know, it probably couldn't have went, you know, it couldn't have went any worse. You know, I mean, we talk about the game just moving too fast. You know, I definitely would say, you know, even at a junior high level, the game was just kind of, you know, moving by me. My head was kind of spinning, you know, and the pace of the game, like I said, my mind, we use this, you know, phrase, you know, but my mind couldn't digest what my eyes were seeing quick enough to know what to call and when to call it. So like I said, my partner kind of took me on his back and got me through that game. So I don't remember the partner's name, but I thank him for it.
What about your first varsity game? How long did it take for you to get your first varsity game? And do you remember any details about that first one?
Sure. Absolutely. So my first varsity game, I was six years in. Into varsity. I think I was a little bit of a late bloomer. I know that some, you know, officials can get in their third or fourth or, you know, fifth year or whatever. Like I said, the first few years, I really wasn't as serious about it as I wish I would have been. I thought I was in it for the money and everything. But my first varsity game actually was a two-man game. Back when they did two-man for varsity, it was a girls' two-man game at Genoa. And I even remember the official that I worked with, Ty Newsom.
Yeah.
He's a great official. Worked a ton of games with him. And like I said, he kind of took me on his back and was a great partner, you know, to be able to get me through that game. At that time, Genoa girls, they were pretty good, and they had some fans that were brutal. The coaching staff could be a little rough on you as well too. And I remember having a call right in front of their bench, right? I missed a travel call. I knew what it was. I went to put air in the whistle and nothing came out. And I think the term that people use is swallowing your whistle. I couldn't get the air to come out of my whistle. I definitely heard about it. But like I said, I was really nervous. It was my first game. It was two man. And like I said, I was just happy to be there.
You've learned a lot over the 20 plus years that you've been in officiating. And I'm sure you've heard a lot of different pre-games. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you cover in your pregame in today's game.
Well, like I said, I'm going to say these, but in no particular order. The first thing is consistency of calls. Okay, that's the first thing. When you go into a game, like I said, you're trying to build that trust factor, with the coaches and the teams. So if there's a call about 95% the same as the call down the other end, you know what I'm saying? Call it the same way. Okay. The last thing that you really want to do is make one call on one end and then make a different call on another end that looked exactly the same way. So we talk about matching up calls. That's one thing that I talk about. I also talk about not having any game interrupters, okay? Especially with people that I may not have worked with before. I always say don't try to be the smartest person in the gym, okay? So let the game come to you, okay? Don't try to be the smartest person. A great game is when you leave the court and nobody remembers who the officials were. And I talk also too about, working our primaries, okay? Work in your primary coverage area. A lot of times when we get in trouble is when we go out of our primary area. The only time that you should really go out of your primary area is if there's, we call them whales. If there's a whale that you have to get that's a game saver, that's when you go out of your primary coverage area. But when you stay in your primary coverage area, usually you're in the right spot. You can see the play. You'll start, develop, and finish. And then you can, there's a good chance you'll get the call right then. I also talk about, being perfect in the last 2 minutes of every quarter and the last 4 or 5 minutes of regulation. Okay. No one's going to remember a call you make, 2 minutes in the game, but they will remember a call that you make, the last 2 minutes of the game. Okay. So just like I said, hold yourself even to a higher standard, especially, at the end of the game, the end of the quarters. Last thing is there's a bunch more, but be a great dead ball officials. Be a great dead ball official. We get ourselves in trouble, when we're not the best dead ball officials. That's when something can happen, after a play, during a scrum, whatever, catch an elbow, you don't see it, they retaliate. A lot of bad stuff can happen, for people. Just be a great dead ball officials.
And in the first quarter, we will talk about the new rules this year, courtesy of the NFHS. And here we are in Ohio basketball that does not have a shot clock. So we're going to bypass that one that came through with from the NFHS. But the first one, probably the most talked about one, I think, of all of the rules this year. Discusses the two-shot free throw for common fouls when they reach the quote bonus. Pretty much eliminates, well, does eliminate the one-and-one scenario, and sets the new foul limits each quarter for awarding the bonus free throw. So after that fifth foul, we're going to be shooting two free throws, and kind of something unique. They do it in college for, I believe, women's basketball. But here we are. We have it in high school. No more one and one, two shot free throws. What do you think? Remember, we're going to give this a bag of popcorn, okay? One through five on the bags of popcorn, one being the worst, five being the best. So, what on a scale of one to five, what do you give the new rule?
I mean, I like to see it, but I mean, right now I'm giving it about a two.
Wow.
I have reasons behind that. I mean, I guess a reason behind that, that I would say, and like I said, I'm in, no way, at the NFHS level or anything. But so you're talking about getting to the bonus, okay? You get into five team fouls. In the past, you would what? Get to six, and then you wouldn't be on the bonus, okay? So that means you could have 12 fouls without getting to the bonus. Now, with the new rule for four quarters, you're at 16 fouls before you get into the bonus. So that's four more fouls that you might be pinning on some of the better players of the team. So you might have people playing in the fourth quarter and overtime that have no business being on the court just because some of the other players might be in foul trouble. I guess that's my two cents, not saying that's going to happen. That's just kind of thing that I, thinking about.
Yeah, I love hearing different opinions on this, and that's one I haven't heard. So that's real interesting to me. Another rule, 752 through 755, we're talking about the throw-in procedure for front court violations. What do you think? How many bags of popcorn on this one?
I'd say probably about a three.
A three, that's not bad. We'll take that one.
Yep.
Yep. Any concerns about that this year?
No, I mean, I think for the most part, you're gonna put the ball into play close to where, you know, the foul, occurred, or, violation of foul occurred anyway. So, I mean, I guess you're gonna take out, a couple things, a couple disadvantages to where they might be in certain spots and they might be, in the corner or something like that. But it's not a bad rule.
Yeah, and just to clarify, I think everybody probably knows this, but the designated spots are either nearest to the 28-foot mark along each sideline, or the nearest spot 3 feet outside of the lane line at the end line. So there's four spots for us to take care of. 766, throw-in administration also was addressed by the NFHS in a change to this rule. So when an official administers a throw-in to the wrong team, the error can be fixed before the first dead ball, after the ball becomes live, unless there's been a change in possession. How many popcorn bags are you giving this one?
It's definitely a five. This should have been changed a while ago,
Yeah.
to be honest with you. So
2-1-3 again. We don't have to worry about that with the shot clock. We don't have that in Ohio. 3-4-5 and 3-5-6 pretty much solidifies our duties as the uniform police again. Yeah, 3-4-5 talks about the styles of uniform bottoms. 3-6-2 talks about the logos and trademarks. So what do you think? How many bags on that one?
I'm not really the uniform police. I really don't get into it. So, if there was an NA, I would put NA, but let's go about two and a half.
Oh man, I got busted one time on the uniform police. Those TV highlights are killers.
There's absolutely yes.
Yeah.
They always come back to get you, and you're
Oh
not
yeah.
shoot.
Yeah. They come back. That's when they get screenshots and they appear all over the place. Yeah. And the last one, 933, just an amendment to allow a player to step out of bounds and return to the court if they do not gain an advantage. The player is penalized only if, after returning in bounds, the player is the first to touch the ball or avoids a violation. Thoughts on that one? How many bags of popcorn on that one?
Probably four.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Good. All right. That sounds good. That was easy. That was a piece of cake, right?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
All
No,
right.
it's still
So
there.
we're gonna go out to the second quarter here in a little bit. We're gonna stop and listen to somebody talk. But second quarter, stick around and listen to this. Ryan is pretty involved in his association. We want to have a discussion on his association. See how I did that?
Yes, you did. I like that.
If you listen to your online music with the Spotify app, you can also listen to podcasts, including the High School Basketball Referee podcast. If you utilize Spotify, go ahead and tap on the follow button, provide a rating, leave a review comment, participate in the podcast poll, and answer the Q&A, all on the Spotify app. So as we mentioned, we're going to talk about Ryan's association. So you have to think about that if you don't get that right away. But Ryan is the new secretary of the Bay of Area Officials Association. Okay, so he's taking over that job this year. You were the mechanics instructor and me mechanics interpreter for basketball for 8 years, from 2015 to 23. You were also an instructor from 2013 to 22. You were president from 2010 to 11. So let's talk about just a few things. Number one, talk about the importance of being involved within your association and how to get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think the first thing is just being willing, being willing and not being afraid. As a younger official, I know, I kind of stepped up kind of at a younger age. I mean, and I kind of always had like the philosophy, why not me? I mean, there's so many things that you can get involved in. You can help, you know, present at local meetings. You can kind of be a mentor, even for younger officials. Even if you're a younger official yourself, you know, you can get involved in a lot of different things. You know, you can take, you know, office, you know, spots, you know, in the association. You can, you know, volunteer to help out, you know, with the, if they have like the association on a website or Facebook page or something like that. There's always opportunity, you know, to get involved. You just need to be willing to do it.
Yeah, and the other half, you have to ask also, because it's not something it's not something that, you know, somebody's going to have to know that you're interested. And we can all sit back and complain about, you know, the current people that are there, but unless you become involved and see what's all involved, I think that's kind of where we just need people to step up and say, hey, you know what, when that job comes open, I'm interested in that. Or, you know, even if it's not open, you know what can I do to help out the association? I know that person's in that job, and maybe you have a runoff. I don't know. But just to let people know, get involved, right. Tell somebody that you're interested. So question two, then, you've been an instructor for 9 years, no longer doing that, but things have changed over those 9 years. Things are done online now. Talk about your thoughts on this online change and what challenges and maybe positives are associated with the online licenses now.
Sure. So I think there's pros and cons to both. You know, the pros are definitely you can take the course, you can take any officiating course, whatever sport it is, you know, 12 months out of the year, you know, and you can do it at your convenience. I mean, that's great, you know, when it comes to, you know, working around your schedule and everything along those lines. I mean, it's great. It's very, you know, it's very, you know, easy to kind of, you know, take the time to be able to, you know, do an online class and the flexibility to be able to do it. I mean, that's definitely a pro. I would say, you know, some of the challenges, you know, especially, you know, from the, you know, the retention part of things is, you know, I guess a con would be it's harder to get those officials into the association, and it's harder for them to run. I think challenging, at least for our area and our association, you know, it's harder for the retention, you know, to be able to bring those back. I mean, I for an example, you know, we've had 16 newer officials, basketball officials, that have taken the class in the last 2 years. Mm. Four of them are in our association. You know, we reached out to them, tried to get them in, you know, tried to communicate with them through email, through text, through calls. It's just, there's a little bit of a disconnect there. We tried to find ways to bring them in. It's just challenging because when we used to teach the class, I mean, yes, it definitely was a time commitment, but you build rapport, you know, with those officials. You know, you might have had 6, 7, 8 classes to where you're sitting in front of them, you know, you were for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours going over, you know, the book. And then we're going to scrimmages together and everything. So you really build that relationship and kind of bring them into the association. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely pros and cons to it. I don't think there's a perfect way and a perfect answer for what to do. I think the good thing is the state is open for ideas, you know, for recruitment and everything. So I applaud them for that. I think, though, it's a work in progress still.
Yeah. Right. I agree. You, as we mentioned, you've been a mechanics interpreter, and now you're the secretary. So talk to us a little bit about some of the things you did as the mechanics interpreter for your association and how that's going to help you in your first year as secretary.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I enjoyed mechanics, you know, interpreter. I've always prided myself, you know, in having very good, you know, proper mechanics. You know, I tell young officials, you know, the way that you move up is great. You know, you need to definitely know the rules, but you need to have great mechanics and great signals. That's how you get seen. That's how you move up in the ranks. You know, so I've always enjoyed, you know, being able to present at some of our local meetings. Like I said, I was, you know, myself along with the rules interpreter, we would host the meetings and go through the different presentations. But I think just, you know, having the knowledge and be able to facilitate that, you know, whether we're doing, you know, a meeting, you know, in a classroom setting, whether we're trying to get some court time, and everything. Most of the time, you know, as a secretary, I schedule, you know, I'm scheduling most of the local meetings now. So I think just kind of having that knowledge, you know, of how the meetings run kind of, you know, will help me, you know, as the secretary coming in.
Yeah. And for some of the listeners who maybe don't really know the job of an association secretary, kind of give us a high level overview of that.
Like I said, it's I'll go through it pretty quickly here. I mean, this is in no way all of it, but I mean, you're in charge of the budget for the whole association. You're in charge of, you know, meeting times, location, taking attendance at meetings, making sure members are in good standing, collecting dues for the association, communicating, you know, with the association, do anything, you know, important information from the state. If you have a website, in charge of a website, Facebook page, the monthly communication newsletter that we do. We have an annual banquet in charge of that, you know, in charge of the executive, you know, committee meetings, votes, change of the bylaws, recruiting ideas. And we also have a Hall of Fame in our association that I'm the oversee. It's a lot. There's probably a lot more. There's a lot of great people in my association that are very willing to help out. So I appreciate that. It's just there's a lot on secretary's plates. So I mean, you know, some of the listeners out there that, you know, just be patient with your secretary, especially if you have a larger association. You know, they're trying their best, you know, but I mean, they also have other jobs and everything along those lines. So there's a lot that entails being a secretary.
Yeah. And toss in a glorified babysitter too. I mean,
there you go.
Yeah. And finally, what are some of the challenges for associations? You know, I think we all look for ideas on what to do in our own meetings. And I think different associations probably do different things throughout the year. So talk a little bit about some of the things that the Bay Area Officials Association does in basketball at their meetings to keep things fresh.
Sure, absolutely. So I think, like I said, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, it's just for, you know, I think some of the toughest challenge is to keep people engaged for an hour or 15 minutes at the local meetings. You know, I guess the first thing that we do is have the right people in the right positions. Okay. Are they in the position because they want to be in the position, or are they in the position because you just don't have anybody else? Like I said, the people that we have in our basketball officiating and the rules and mechanics interpreter, Tom Priestman, he's a great rules guy. He knows the rules. He's a great, you know, great speaker, great presenter. He really cares, you know, about, you know, the association. Also, you know, our mechanics, you know, interpreter who took over from me, Kurt Leber, he taught the class with me for years and everything. He's a very good presenter. Like I said, I think, you know, he went to school to be a, you know, in the education field, and he does a really, really good job presenting. He's able to engage, you know, the audience and does a really good job. So I guess the first thing is having the right people, you know, in the right positions. I guess to keep it fresh is just think outside the box. Okay. Video is good. I think video, you know, is able to get discussions going. People just aren't, you know, sitting there, you know, listening to you read out of a rules book. Another thing that we do is we like to break up in groups. You know, a lot of times, and this is very, very simple too. You can come up with 10 scenarios or you know, 10, 15 definitions in Rule 4 and just give a 2 or 3 minute synopsis, you know, but break up, you know, maybe, you know, put a younger official with a new official, you know, or sorry, a newer official with a veteran official, you know, be able to have them, you know, just have them prepare for 5 or 10 minutes and then have them present. You know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of the, you know, mechanics and rules, you know, interpreters, they think that they have to run the whole entire meeting. No, you know, ask for volunteers. We also have to do surveys for topics, what topics, you know, they would like to hear, you know, if, you know, point of emphasis, different stuff like that. So I guess, you know, like I said, we're in no way, you know, reinventing the wheel over at the Bay Area Officials Association. But those are just, I guess, a few of the things that we do to kind of, you know, keep the meetings going well.
Yeah, that's really some good stuff. And I think the conversation here really helps people know what's going on in some associations, and also some good ideas also for a lot of people to implement in their association level too. So, hey, it's halftime. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will go into the second half, have our five quick decisions at the end. We'll be right back. If you find value in the High School Basketball Referee with Mark Frelick podcast, in the show notes of this and every episode, you'll find a couple of ways to become a popcorn sponsor. One is through Venmo, and you can find that at HS Basketball Referee Podcast. And the other is monthly support through Spotify. Become a popcorn sponsor, and we will let listeners know that you helped support the podcast. We want to deal with a little bit of communication in our third quarter with Ryan Bowers. And Ryan, as the game progresses along, our communication as a crew, as you know, is real important. Talk about how us officials can communicate effectively throughout the game.
Absolutely. Like I said, I think the first thing is great eye contact, throughout the game. This is an imperative, especially if you're working with a couple officials that maybe you've not worked with, that many times before. Wait an extra second, to inbound the ball. Don't be in a hurry. This is huge. Also, just small little things like little encouragement. If official has to make a tough call when they're kind of walking by you, going to report to the table, hey, good call. Or we do the, I think we've all, seen the signal before where you the tap, the two fists together, pretty much meaning good call, like I said, just encourage, your partners throughout the game. It's a tough job out there. And I think little communication like that, I think also coaches and fans, they see that as well too. And like I said, they appreciate it. They might not appreciate some of the calls you have, but I think they appreciate the good communication because they know you're really working hard and you're working together. So
you talked about a little bit earlier about, if you're working on a crew that maybe you don't know and you're talking about communications, what do you do when you get to a game with that crew and you want to make that next hour so comfortable? What kind of things are you doing to help make that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for the first 20 or 30 minutes, even probably before we get in the locker room, I try to just keep it light. I'm not talking the nuts and bolts of officiating or going into the pregame. Just trying to keep it light, getting an understanding of kind of who they are, where they're from, if they have a family, what they like to do. Just building that trust and rapport before you really get into the exacts of your pregame. Like I said, you're kind of building that trust. So then once you get into the pregame, you're able to then, really dive down, and everyone be on the same page because you've already started to build that trust factor. If you're just sitting there and you're really not saying anything to your partner when maybe you're sitting waiting for the JV game to be done, and then you just go in there, and start, just hammer them hard. It seems like almost like you're interrogating your partners. So I would say, just like I said, keep it light at first and just kind of, build that rapport before you really get into the exacts of the pregame.
Have you ever had a situation where you're in the locker room and maybe you and another official have words, or maybe your partner and another official are kind of getting into it? They really don't get along that well. Have you seen that happen? And I guess without mentioning any names, talk about maybe what you've seen and how officials can learn to, especially young officials, maybe deal with that in a locker room situation.
Sure. So I really haven't had a situation to where, I was having words with another official, but maybe, a situation to where an official is officiating out of their primary or what we call over officiating. Mm-hmm. One thing that I might try to do, I try not to single anybody out. I use the word we a lot opposed to you. Okay. Like, for example, in the second half, one thing we should try to do better is officiating more in our primers. When I use the word we, it's not really singling anybody out. It's kind of just saying as a crew. I think this comes off a lot better. I think it comes off you know, as we're all trying to work together, I'm not singling anybody out. And I think it just kind of helps, you know, build the rapport of the crew, especially if you had a rough first half. I mean, we've all had these rough first halves where we get in the locker room and we're like, oh man, what just happened out there? And what you know, usually there's silence for a little while. But I think really just being able to, after that silence and after you kind of just understand what happened, to be able to, as a crew, not you as individuals. I've always used that approach.
So let's pivot to communication and coaches. Now, you had mentioned earlier that was one of the things that you learned maybe last year is better communication, maybe some better phrases. Talk a little bit about your philosophy when handling coaches and maybe how it's changed over the years.
Sure. So I think you need to give a coach in the, you know, definitely need to give a coach in the ear. A lot of times, you know, coaches, all they want to do is they want to be heard, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying that in a negative way, you know, I mean, they have a lot going on, you know, from the game itself to the team they're coaching. There's a lot of emotion. I mean, they're human, just like us, just like officials. Officials have emotions, coaches have emotions. So I think if you really just, you know, give them an ear, especially in a tense game, they will appreciate that. You know, a lot of times when coaches get mad is when you don't talk to them, or when you don't at least go over there and address them and listen to what they're saying. You don't have to respond. A lot of times you don't need to respond. You just need to listen what they're saying. So
tell us some encounters maybe that you've had with any upset coach and how you're able to diffuse it. So basically just give us an example of this that happened in your career.
Sure. Absolutely. So, I mean, a lot of times what I'll do is, to defuse a situation, you need to go over there and be close to the coach. The last thing that you want to be doing is yelling, both, you know, the coach and you yelling across the floor at each other. Nothing good comes out of that. You know, also too, at a timeout, a lot of times at a timeout, we've all seen where a coach comes running out on the floor fairly nicely, walk them back to their bench, listen to what they're saying, you know, and like I said, usually that diffuses the situation. If they're just irate and they just want to give you an ear, listen to it. If they're crossing the line, that's when you can either address it, give a stop sign, or like I said, if they've taken it, you know, if they've been unsporting and kind of crossed the line, then you might have to penalize it. But I would say just, you know, go over to them. You know, be able to listen to them in a non-abrasive way, and then, like I said, go from there. So
you've been doing this 20 plus years. I'm sure that you've had an opportunity or two to distribute a technical foul or one or two, maybe. Some guys aren't T guys, and that's good. Some guys say it's good for the game and it's just another foul, and that's true too. Talk a little bit maybe about any memorable tees that you've distributed to a coach that maybe has an interesting story with it.
I do have an interesting story. But I guess a technical foul is just like any other foul in the game. I mean, I think we're lying if we're saying that we don't get emotional when we call technical fouls. But it's how you respond after you call a technical foul, you know, it shows, you know, what kind of job you do as an official. Because like I said, sometimes an official will call a T and then that'll completely get them out of the game and they'll be done for the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, but I guess just to transcend to a memorable T I had, this happened, it might've been, 10, 12 years ago. I was officiating. I won't say the gym, but it was kind of a smaller gym. And the game was kind of getting to the point to where it was a close game, two very competitive teams. I think it was for first place. It was kind of near the end of the season. You know, it's beginning of February, end of January, beginning of February, when all the craziness happens. And game was over, you know, and I was at the way far end of the court, and there was a little opening to where you had to get to it to get off the court. Well, both of my officials were a lot closer to that opening. So they run, and they basically get to that opening, and there's a little steps to go down, and they go down the steps. Well, I was almost there, and all of a sudden, the losing coach comes out of nowhere and steps right in front of me and won't let me pass him. Wow. And I'm like, oh no, what's going to happen here? And as officials, we still have jurisdiction until we get off the court.
Yeah.
So I'm like, coach, please, please move out of my way. Well, he wasn't going to move out of my way.
Wow.
So the only thing I could do is I teed him up right there. he was surprised. I had to yell to my partner, you know, my guys, hey guys, I had a tee. And so they came back. I had to go and report to the table. And then I went back down there. I mean, nothing happened after the first tee, but I mean, if he would have got a second tee, then he would have been, you know, done for, you know, the game course was over, but then he would have, you know, missed the next couple games and had to take a, you know, anger management course or whatever. But I guess that was my most memorable tee, end of the game, technical foul. So
it did the job though, right?
It did the job. And the crazy part about it was I had the same team two nights later, and I had a girls game the next night at the same gym. so by the time I finally got to the guys game again or whatever, he actually, after the game, that they won that game by, you know, by a good amount, he came down and we talked and apologized for it, so it all worked out and it was okay.
Well, we are going to go and get a little personal in the fourth quarter as we begin this. And Ryan, as you're heading home from a game, you had a rough day at the office and you have a game in a few hours. What are you doing to maybe get your mind straight and ready for the game?
Sure. Absolutely. So, I mean, take a little break, going home. Sitting in peace and quiet, you know, even if it's for 15 and 20 minutes, just to kind of, you know, clear my head a little bit before the game. I want to kind of put a separation, you know, between, you know, what happened at work and then the game. And then usually that's enough, you know, just that little bit of pause is enough just to, you know, go to the game and, you know, I'm ready to be focused on the game for that night.
So speaking about the day at the office, how does officiating help you in your professional career?
Sure, absolutely. So, I mean, like I said, I mean, officiating is, we're in the people business. You know, in my professional career, it's about, you know, building relationships daily. You know, it's about building relationships. It's about building that trust. Trust just doesn't happen, you know, the first time that you meet somebody. You know, it's being consistent time after time after time after time. You know, again, a lot of coaches, you know, will say, or most coaches will say, you know, when they see an official, I mean, you know, can we trust that official? Do we know what they're going to call? So, like I said, it's just building that trust factor and building that relationship, you know, over time. That's kind of where, you know, my job and kind of officiating goes, you know, in line.
Talk a little bit about family dynamics and how you've been able to balance that life between your personal life and officiating life. And I imagine that because you entered officiating so early, that's just something that everybody kind of has gotten used to, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I would just say keeping your priorities in check. I mean, when I first started officiating, I would do every single game there possibly was, you know, but I mean, keeping your priorities in check, you know, God, family, officiating, you know, understanding that officiating is just a game, you know, and, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of other things in life that are a lot more important than officiating. I think once I started having an understanding about that, I really started, you know, in enjoying the games and really started, you know, enjoying even more of what I was doing out there on the floor.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Take a look at your career, 20 plus years. And I'm sure there's been a lot of games that you remember, but if you could just maybe focus on one game that you remember the most and tell us why it's a memorable game.
Sure. Like I said, I don't know if there really is one game. I'm trying to think in my mind of a game. I mean, I've done, you know, state, you know, I've been very blessed to do, you know, state, you know, championship games and state games and regional games and everything along those lines. You know, I think a very memorable game was, you know, that I had, just kind of come into mind was I was working with two younger officials. This was an end of the season, regular season game. When I got there, I honestly, and I don't mean this being a bad way, I thought they were the JV officials. Uh-huh. And then I realized they were my two partners. And I thought, okay, all right, you know, here we go, Ryan. Just be positive, be encouraging, you know. I mean, control what you have to do, but you need to encourage these people, you know, these officials the whole entire time, because, I mean, I think the game's a little bit above their head. This is a big game, tough crowd. And I guess that game couldn't have went any better. They raised their level. They were confident in their calls. And when I walked out of there, I said, that was a great game. You know, I mean, from what I had coming into the game to where what transcended and after the game, it was just great to work with a couple officials that maybe were inexperienced, and they raised their level, and everybody in the place thought we did a great job. Even, you know, even the team that lost, it said after the game was over, you know, good job, you know, to you guys. You guys worked very, very well together. So I definitely, you know, I definitely enjoyed that and pride myself in being able to, you know, have a game like that. So.
And welcome to the post game. We talk a little bit. One question about the friendships of officials. The rest of it is a little segment called If. Okay, if something would happen. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about the importance of friendship in the high school basketball arena with officials. You know, that obviously is real important because we do travel to games quite a bit. Tell us a little bit about that, and tell us some examples maybe also of what that friendship's all about from your perspective.
No, absolutely. I mean, officiating's been great. I mean, I've been able to meet people all walks of life. You know, I might not have anything in common, or come from a different walk of life than they do. But once you're on the floor together, once you kind of almost bond together and go out to battle together, I mean, you form a bond. You know, that really is, you know, a great bond, you know, to where you're connecting with people that you normally, you know, wouldn't connect with. You know, I would say 90%, you know, of the closest people that I know are officials, you know, that I would be able to call, you know, not just about officiating, but, you know, but personal stuff as well too. Like I said, it's a bond that you form when you're out there, when you're kind of, you know, there's only two or three of you out there together, and, you know, you need to, you know, form, you know, that bond together and that closeness to be able to get the job done.
So we finished with the seriousness of the podcast. Now the rest of this stuff is all fun stuff. Okay. So we're going to enter the if zone of the podcast. All right, here we go. If there is one rule that you could change about high school basketball, what would it be?
Probably the closely guarded rule. I would just get rid of it.
Oh, good. All right. That's the first time I've heard that one. I like that. If you had a chance to change the officiating uniforms, what would you do to change them?
Sure. So when I worked college a few years ago, we had the wide stripe. I like the wider stripes on the officials' uniforms. So I think I would have, like I said, at least one wider stripe on the sides, maybe even have, you know, all the stripes a little bit wider.
I think Texas has wide stripes. Somebody from Texas, you'll have to let me know. But I think if I remember right, I remember seeing Texas has the wide black stripes. But,
okay.
I'll have to check that. If you had a great game, or if you had a frustrating game and you're traveling home alone, who are you going to call on the way home to talk about that game and why?
Well, if I'm having a frustrating game and possibly if I had a suspect call or something like that, I think the first person I would probably call just to get ahead of the game would be Dr. Denny Morris.
Okay.
He would probably already hear about it.
Probably.
And he would probably already know exactly what happened. I would probably try to do some damage control and call him, so I wouldn't be in his doghouse.
If you could go back in your younger days, and you're not that old anyways, but if you go back in your younger days as an official, what is one thing that you wished you would have done differently?
Sure. I think the first like 5 or 6 years, I would have taken it a little more serious. When I got into it, I got into the month for the money. You know, my mechanics were sloppy. My signals were sloppy. My rule knowledge was bad. Like I said, I think I would have taken it a little more serious, you know, and maybe even went to a couple camps those first couple years. That's why I was a little bit of a late bloomer. But I think that's something I would have done different.
And the final question, if you had the opportunity to pick one facility that you would like to officiate at, where would it be?
Sure, absolutely. St. John's Arena in Columbus. I think that would be a great, you know, it's kind of a smaller venue. I've been at the Shot. It's kind of a smaller venue. I'd love to do a game there if they ever went back there, you know, which I'm not sure they will.
The final segment is here. It is five quick decisions time. And Ryan, five more questions. Can you handle that?
I think so. Okay. I'm up for it.
All right. We're fed on Friday and Saturday evenings on occasion, not every week. So don't get jealous if you're listening and you don't get anything, but, on occasion we do. And over the years, some of the stuff has been really, really good. What's been some of your favorite things that you've had?
Absolutely. So after the game, a lot of times they'll bring in, you know, in tinfoil, a wrapped up dog. Yeah. Okay. Right. So when you open it up, if it's a brat, oh, that's the gold. That's a gold mine, you know. It's a gold mine having a brat. The only other thing that would be kind of compared, a step down, but compared would be an all beef hot dog. You know, so you either have a brat or an all beef hot dog. If you just have a regular hot dog, a lot of times, I mean, I hate to say it, I don't like to waste food, but I don't even eat those.
Yeah, but you got to take the food, man, right? You have, no matter what's there, you have to take the food. Otherwise, they won't do it anymore.
Even if you walk out in the hallway and throw it outside under the trash can, you know, you want to be able to, you know, look like you eat the food so that they'll, you know, be able to supply the food for the next game for the officials.
Okay, number two, what do you think is the most misunderstood rule from fans and coaches?
Yeah, absolutely. So when a player gets hurt, especially if they're on a shooting foul, just kind of the procedure, who's going to come in and shoot the foul shots for the player, you know, if you can buy them back in with a timeout. It's very, very confusing. And like I said, I think that that's the most confusing rule for coaches, fans, and even some officials.
Question number three, what is your most embarrassing moment in officiating?
Sure. So, I mean, this wasn't during the game, but I forgot my pants one night. And the both the officials that I worked with were a little bit bigger than me. And luckily, I was very lucky that they had they were both wearing black dress pants. Yeah. And everything. And I remember the one official gave me black dress pants, but he didn't have a belt with them. So that for that whole game, I was afraid I kept hiking my pants up because I thought my pants were going to fall down. And I felt like it was just the worst game ever. I felt like everyone was looking at me as, I guess that was the most embarrassing moment.
Isn't that a terrible feeling when you open up your bag and,
oh
yeah,
the worst.
Man. From walking onto the basketball floor to walking off the basketball floor at each game that you officiate, what is your favorite part of officiating a high school basketball game?
Absolutely. Just knowing that you were part of something special that night. You know, it was a great, no matter if you're in a very, very small rural area, if you're in a bigger city, whether, you know, it is, you know, the first game of the season or the state championship or whatever, knowing that you're being a part of that event. And that's the best reality, you know, the kind of the best reality show that you can possibly be a part of.
And the last question, what is the funniest thing a player, coach, or a fan has ever said to you?
So absolutely, yeah. So a fan saying the phrase, "You need to go back to Foot Locker, ref."
Yeah, why did they always? Yeah, why did Foot Locker start that? Huh? You know, they could have given those guys different uniforms.
Absolutely, and most of the uniforms they would always that they would wear there, they'd be long and they would be baggy. So hopefully when they said that, they weren't thinking at my, they weren't, you know, making fun of my attire and how I was wearing my shirt.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Well, Ryan, thanks very much for taking the hour out of your day to spend with the High School Basketball Referee Podcast with Mark Frelick. I appreciate the time. Best of luck. Continued success on your officiating career. And thanks again for being a part of this.
Hey, Mark, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm really thankful for what you do with the podcast and for high school basketball in general.